Kamenetsky Brothers Podcast, Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. It is Monday, the 9th of July, I believe, Andy.
It is.
We're off to a really strong start. And a lot to cover today.
A lot that's been previously covered, right, then torpedoed by the just sort of speed with which news carries NBA free agency beginnings.
Correct. We got out of last week's podcast, and I don't even make this.
It was recorded right after the news of LeBron coming to the Lakers. Right. On a Sunday. We recorded on a Monday.
This is important. We should come and talk about this. It's LeBron James. And so we started talking about what else might be coming. And people say, 10 minutes later, it was totally blown up. And they use it as a figure of speech. Literally 10 minutes after we were done with this, the Lakers renounced Julius Randle and announced the signing of Rajon Rondo. And so about 65% of our podcast was gutted.
Yes, destroyed.
So that thing didn't have much of a shelf life. So we're back this week. A lot to cover. We'll do that. We'll get into some of the stuff about Randle and Rondo because it's important. Carmelo Anthony is in the news, and we'll tell you whether or not it's a good idea if he's linked to the Lakers. Who else the Lakers might look to sign in free agency? They got a little money left over. And man alive, Andy, I didn't see this coming. When you think about free agent news, that LiAngelo Ball would end up in the JBL, but it's happened, so we definitely need to talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, he must have had a very good interview with the Los Angeles Ballers.
Right. Oh, God. They're apparently all named the Ballers.
It is my understanding, based off this press release. I have not been keeping
following
up
closely.
I have been mostly following their press releases, but in the press release, which we will read later in the show, about LiAngelo Ball joining the Los Angeles Ballers, teaming up, by the way, with LaMelo Ball, right, 2/3 of the way there towards the dream, Brian. Of all three
I have a feeling
ball
those
kids
are not going to be honestly refereed games.
All three kids, though, playing together.
All they need
Los
to do
Angeles.
Is convince.
That's what I'm saying. They're 2/3 of the way there. But it's my understanding from this press release, from what I gather, that the teams around our great nation are the Ballers.
I actually think that's kind of brilliant.
It is actually.
I mean,
kind
for
of
all
brilliant.
The things that we make fun of LeVar and the business infrastructure and all that. That's kind of brilliant.
Well, I mean, look, if you're going to do something stupid, you might as well make it fun and stupid.
Hey.
And mission accomplished.
Look, if Paul Brown can name the team after himself, then why can't LeVar Ball name every team after himself? So we'll get to that. Let's start with Randle, because apparently what happened is, and as Ramona Shelburne's reporting, is that he wanted to be renounced. He asked the Lakers to renounce his rights.
Which sounds incredibly dramatic.
I love it.
Renounce.
I renounce you. Everything about you, Julius Randle, and everything you stand for, we renounce.
Yeah, I
would turn my back on you now.
I wrote a piece about this on The Athletic, where, for people who aren't aware, we're both now writing for The Athletic, the LA branch, and you should be subscribing, by the way. A lot of great Lakers coverage in particular.
It may still be possible for you to get a t-shirt.
Yeah, but there's a lot of terrific Lakers coverage there. Bill Oram, Pete Zayas. But renouncing sounds like something that, a 12th century king would do to, his disloyal brother.
Sure.
You renounce his birthright and send him to some evil forest.
It's the jazz singer. I have no son. I mean, right. That's really what the Lakers do here.
It's a little much.
It's great.
For just, team and player are going to part ways.
All it means is we're not signing you.
Right. It's
but
a little
it's
much.
Way better than we're not signing
but
you.
But in this particular case, though, with everything that had led up to Julius Randle eventually asking for his rights to be renounced, it actually felt apropos.
It did.
Because there had been so much building up to this point that really a renouncing of the rights was the best way to do it.
Yeah, and it's funny because the renouncing part, you get to that, it's like, oh, well, if he doesn't want to be here, he doesn't want to be here, and we let him go. But the question you then have to ask is, why were they in a position that Randle felt like he needed to be renounced, his role wouldn't be clear, he didn't have a future here and all that? Now, I think he's wrong. I think he could have had a really good future here, but my opinion was less important than his. And, we've rightly, I think, pointed out the ways that the front office has done a really good job of maneuvering from where we were a couple years ago to where they are now. But there have been a few moments where they've kind of screwed it up, and I think this is one of them, because whether they really wanted to keep Randle or not, they clearly last year thought they weren't going to, didn't treat him with a lot of importance, and ended up undercutting what became an incredibly valuable piece. And instead of being able to get something out of it or being in a position where they could sign him to what probably would have been a pretty reasonable contract, you know, $12, $13 million a year for 3 or 4 years, which given how Randle played would have been, you know, was very reasonable, very team friendly, and very usable around the league. You got to trade it. They put themselves in this position where he just never felt like he was part of the future. And even if you think he's not, you can't behave in that way.
Yeah.
You have to make the guy think that he is. And it's kind of mean, I suppose, but that's how you got to do it.
Yeah, one of the things I wrote in this piece was sports has a reputation as a meritocracy. But that's
you quoting yourself.
Yeah, I am quoting myself. But that, again, you should subscribe so you can read the whole thing. But that's as naive as an adult believing in Santa Claus. Like everything politics and broader agendas seek into the mix, still the best organizations find ways to mask that reality.
Yep.
And forget the fact that the Lakers never
sign
found
up and Andy will read the whole thing to you.
I'll actually show up at your home.
Right.
I'll just show up and I'll orate and then I'll leave. It's all part of your subscription rate. In that sense,
but
it's
you
really
can't get that and the t-shirt.
No, it's one or the other. You either get me orating or you get a t-shirt.
I personally recommend a t-shirt.
Certainly. I mean, there's certainly less waiting around. I mean, you do have to work around my schedule. Yeah, I mean, I'm not on demand. Like, you know, this isn't like your cable
and you
box.
Only get one story.
But I mean, like, forget the idea that the Lakers didn't actually find a way to mask that reality. They never tried.
No.
They really
didn't.
Over the course of the season, like, you know, Julius went from having what seemed to be a predetermined role off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seemed to be determined in training camp, despite the fact that Brook Lopez and Julius Randle on paper seemed like a very good fit together. And then once Julius was playing so well that Luke really had no choice but to start him, Luke would praise him, and none of this ever seemed necessarily personal, but the praise always felt muted by comparison to like what Brandon Ingram would get or what Lonzo Ball would get or Josh Hart or Kyle Kuzma. There just always seemed to be less of a full-throated acceptance and enthusiasm about Julius compared to the other young core.
For me, it was less about Luke, because even going back to last year and the year before that, you know, the 2 years they spent together, Julius, in his happier moments, would talk about how Luke would drive him that way. And I think that was part of how Luke saw getting to, the ways he would praise, not praise, criticize, whatever. The playing time issues are different. I think for me, it's just the sort of the overall, like the messaging you got from higher above Luke.
Hey, it was everybody.
And, you know, that he was just never really part of that.
Yeah.
And it's not the end of the world, and I don't know what would have come of it necessarily, but it is definitely a waste of potential there, because I think he's going to play very well in New Orleans next to Anthony Davis.
And Nikola Mirotic.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a really
good front court. And, you know, Randle's shortcomings are, you know, we think about the power forward needing to stretch the floor for the center. It's the other way around in New Orleans, where they have two guys who can create space for
Randle.
All
three of them can play off each other.
Yeah, and it should work really well.
By the way, too, I mean, and we're going to get into this in a second, because we're going to talk about the offseason acquisitions so far, re-signings, and how it looks like it's shaking out. One thing the Lakers could actually use right now is a small ball center.
Yeah.
And Julius Randle actually
could
was
that
a
guy.
Very good small ball center.
That's that, and you know, there's not much you can do about it now, but in the grand scheme of things, I will chalk this up as a loss.
Yes.
Well,
you and I have been very much proponents of Julius Randle for the last few years, and you know, do I think he's going to go down as, you know, like a Sam Bowie versus Michael Jordan type of decision
they
botched?
They over the course of time, put themselves in a position where they made a relationship untenable with an important player. Some of it could have come down to the agent, too. They don't seem to have a really good relationship with Aaron Mintz.
I would not be
like
looking.
Aaron Mintz, it's sort of the exact opposite of the current relationship with Clutch Sports.
Yeah, well, I mean, for people who are unfamiliar, Aaron Mintz is also D'Angelo Russell's agent, also Paul George's agent.
Right, none of those turned out well.
No.
So there you have it. The flip side of that is, you know, seconds after the Randle renouncement, which was, whoa, Then you got, whoa, when they announced the that Rajon Rondo had signed for a year. And this one is one that the more I've sort of sat with it, at the time I was like, what? over the course of the week or so, I've gotten much more comfortable with this one. The Lakers clearly sending a message to Lonzo, which I think matters. That's not an insignificant part of this development. And then, too, I think, you know, they've been interested in Rondo even going back to last year. They clearly value his intelligence on the floor. They value his ability to facilitate, I think, both the first and a second unit, particularly with LeBron out. As we've heard the strategy articulated, Andy, is the idea is to create easier opportunities for LeBron to score without James himself having to handle the ball. And if nothing else, in terms of raw basketball intelligence, LeBron James and Rajon Rondo might be two of the three or four or five literally smartest players in the NBA.
Yeah, there's no question.
These guys are both savants. I mean, and watching them play together could be a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, it's funny. You and I, everyone talks about Rajon Rondo being a Connect Four savant, which he is.
Right, I've played Connect Four with him.
Yes, we were working with him when he was a Red Bull athlete. I don't know if he still is or not, but we did some project with him where he actually played Connect Four against you and Sal Masekela at the same time.
Beat us both.
Yeah, beat you both. And in a lot of ways, being a Connect Four savant speaks to everything that is Rajon Rondo in the sense that, like a point guard, to succeed in Connect Four, you have to see everything like three or four moves ahead and be planning ahead. But also, too, if you are a Connect Four savant, you're also a weirdo. And yeah, Rajon Rondo is a weird dude.
But we focus so much on the Connect Four part of it because it's like, oh, look, isn't that goofy? And he's a master of a child's game. If you go back and you read like profiles of Rondo and stuff, like he was the kid who would sit in the back of math class and have he is a legit kind of like genius guy.
No, I'm not.
Like whole math things, and like they'd be wondering like, hey, dude, why aren't you paying attention?
Yeah, he's like Chris Bosh with coding. Right, like Chris Bosh is a really he's just a smart guy,
and he'd raise his, you know, like the teacher would call on Rondo, and be like, try to catch him because he's not paying attention or whatever.
You know who he is.
And he's got the entire year's worth of math
done. You know
done.
Who he is? He's good. He's Will Hunting.
Yes,
in Good
right.
Will Hunting, you know, figuring out that equation even though he's just the janitor.
Exactly. And so, you know, I think, though, the parallels, you really can't ignore it. So, I mean, he is a slightly better shooter now than he gets credit for. He's not going to stretch a defense. He does not have, as the kids say, gravity. But he's not as bad at as a catch and shoot guy or off the dribble. He's up, you know.
Say Lance Stevenson.
We'll get to that. But as he used to be, you know, reputation.
Yes.
So it's not quite as much of a disaster there. But I think you cannot overlook the fact that his game and Lonzo's game are remarkably similar.
Yeah, I mean, he's like an older version of Lonzo.
He's an older, angrier, edgier,
weirder
version of Lonzo. And I think that they want Lonzo to learn to be more like that. Be more, you know, have more of an edge, have more of an intensity, take over a locker room a little bit more. So weirdness aside, there's no question that this is signaling to Lonzo, like, we got some stuff for you to work on.
Yeah, I mean, he's a complicated signing. Rondo, like in the sense that, you know, his presence immediately, like you said, creates that narrative about Lonzo Ball either not being here for the long haul or just being on notice. You know, immediately there was word
out. Which
isn't
necessarily a bad thing.
It's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does muddy certain waters when you're talking about a guy who is now a year removed from being described as the franchise face, the transcendent player who was going to break all of Magic's record.
We knew that was not going to hold as soon as they... But that's always been the weirdness of this whole thing.
Well,
as soon as they got players who were better than all of these guys,
I've been saying
Lonzo wasn't going to be the face of the franchise anymore.
I've been saying for a year that the minute they signed LeBron, if that did happen because he was clearly their number one target, we were all just going to pretend that all that crap was never said.
Yeah, or Paul George, they trade for Kawhi or anything. So like the minute they get their superstars, you know, the cover of the media guide, which by the way is down to Brandon Ingram. Got one guy left on that cover.
But I'm just saying, he complicates things. And also, too, I mean, he is a mercurial guy, you know, and he's...
Oh, yeah, no, from that perspective, he makes Luke's job a little trickier. What's funny about it is, though...
He tends to thrive more in winning environments,
yes,
and by definition, well, it better be.
Yeah. But what is also interesting, too, is that he's mercurial and he's crabby, and I can't even... Tanya Ganguly had a great line on Twitter about...
Covers the team for the LA Times.
For the Times, about his response to the way Anthony Davis had been playing in the playoffs. I can't even come close to quoting him. Needless to say, it was salty. It was blue. he's that guy. But the young players, as bad as things went in Chicago for him and for that team, by all, the young players loved him.
Sure.
And
but it's also in part because they were feuding with Dwayne Wade, and he seemed to also be feuding with Dwayne Wade.
Right. But my point is, like, he identified,
sure,
really well with that group of guys. And in New Orleans, that locker room,
yes,
swore by him.
It's just going to be a very interesting dynamic in that locker room, because any locker room with Rondo has an interesting dynamic.
No question. So,
But there are ways he's definitely going to help the team.
And I think if he can shoot a little bit, and Lonzo can shoot a little bit.
I mean, look, it's far more important that Lonzo,
yes,
start being able to shoot, because they actually drafted him with the idea of being able to shoot. So like, Rondo, it is what it is,
right,
whatever you get. Lonzo's supposed to be a guy with three-point range.
If you can get him up to 35-36% from three this year, you can play them together. And in terms of playmaking... In terms of rebounding, in,
yes,
terms of all these things, there's a lot that's good about this potential.
Good luck getting the ball through the passing lanes with those two in,
right,
the backcourt.
Right, and Rondo's defensive reputation is more reputation at this point than it is demonstrable impact on that side. But him with Rondo, with Lonzo, you're going to get some steals, if nothing
you're
else.
You're going to get some steals. And we saw, though, he can pick his spots to be effective. In that opening round series against the Blazers, he was very good against, mm-hmm, Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum.
Yeah, so you put that, now you have Lonzo averaged 7 rebounds a game last year. Rondo has averaged as many as 7.5. Josh Hart averaged, when he started getting playing time, averaged like 7.5 in February and then 6.5 in April.
No, I was saying before...
That's three guys. I mean, these are your guards.
Look, before Rondo was even in the picture, I've been saying for a while that I think Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart could be the best rebounding backcourt, mm-hmm, in the league.
So now you add Rondo to that, and it does open up a lot of options for Walton, and depending on how they want to do it. So you just got to get a little bit of shooting in there. If both those guys shoot enough, it'll work. And I'm kind of curious to see what they do. Other things they need to do. The Lakers have about $5.5 million left to try to improve this team, as well as some minimum contracts. They don't have a lot of space. I think they only have one slot left over if they don't start cutting people.
Right.
One guy.
Let's make sure to make sure everybody knows who they brought in, just to make sure to remind everyone.
Okay. Which Lance Stevenson, JaVale McGee,
re-signed
Rondo,
KCP.
And KCP.
Okay.
I'd like to think people.
No, it's more for the purposes of
frame.
No, but it's more for the purposes of framing.
Right. Okay.
Discussion.
Well, after they got those guys and they signed Svi and they signed Wagner, and we'll get to that in a second. Those guys are playing, and Bonga got a contract, so
yes,
he's going to be on the team. I thought he was going to be stashed.
So did I. Actually.
He's actually over here.
We need to make sure he's eating.
Yes, that's true. They have bratwurst in Germany.
Still need to. I mean, clearly not enough.
But the one of the names now, especially now that Brook Lopez is gone, he's going to go to Milwaukee. Is Carmelo
that was a guy
Anthony.
Everybody assumed would end up back on the Lakers?
I'm not sure assumed, but hoped. A lot of people hoped. I hoped that he would be back on the Lakers, but he's not. Melo is going to be bought out or traded or something by the Thunder over the next few weeks. And while reports say that Houston is the front runner there, the Lakers are obviously a team that's going to be he's going to be linked to. Let me give you the argument for, because I know how you feel, and I think you know how I feel. But here's the argument for: if you can get Carmelo Anthony, who was not good, particularly over the second half in Oklahoma City last year, I think we'd agree,
yeah,
to come off the bench,
mm-hmm,
and play 15, 20 minutes a night, that Melo as your sort of go-to second unit scorer is against other second units, particularly, could be effective and he will give you a legitimate sort of go-to guy in those moments where LeBron is off the floor. That, Andy, is the argument for Carmelo Anthony. I think delivered with conviction.
Yes. I could feel it.
You sort of like, you know, when you have to like enter the debate club and you have to get out there. Sometimes you have to argue things you don't believe in.
Yeah, I did that for a year on the debate club.
I outlined the viable.
I had to take strong stances, Brian, on the use of pesticides, and I had no idea what I was talking about.
Were you for or against them?
I believe I was for them, which now, as I've learned more, feels even more irresponsible.
Shame.
My debate partner and I had to come up with a lot of phony reasoning. You know what? Actually, now that I think about it, I think we often, over the course of a debate season, had to speak for and against, and equally, we had no idea what we were talking
right.
about.
What is the for? Like pollution and pesticides.
I don't remember. I just remember one time we ended up against two, because we grew up in St. Louis, for people who don't know, and we often ended up in these debates against people from different parts of Missouri, and one time we ended up against two guys who were actually farmers, in which case my debate...
Advantage them.
Well, no. My debate partner then said, he started out his speech with, "You're farmers, huh? Well, so are we." And the best part of that was he made his speech making the case either for or against these pesticides, whatever it was, but the way the structure works, he made his speech. Then I went up there to get cross-examined based off everything he said, to which point the person asking me about being a farmer, to which I confirmed, yes.
Damn right.
Yes, I am a farmer. He asked about the effect of these pesticides on our crops, to which I said that my father, who is in charge of the farm, only lets me handle the livestock. Yeah. Got him off that thing.
Shame.
I thought it was pretty convincing.
That's a very convincing argument. I
only handle the livestock. What are you going to do?
But anyway, so that's the argument for Melo. There's an argument against. There's a counterpoint.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Even if the Lakers are in the most win now modes, the development of Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma still matters, if for no other reason than raising their trade value so you can get, I guess, more win now. Reducing either of their minutes to give, or their touches to give them to Carmelo Anthony, can't be justified. I think even as a scorer, like at this stage of his career, is Carmelo Anthony actually a better player? Is he actually a better scorer than Brandon Ingram or Kyle Kuzma?
I don't think so.
No. I mean, if you're
certainly less efficient than both of them.
Right. Oh, he's way less efficient. If you're looking for a go-to scorer off the bench the way this lineup seems to be shaking out, it would be Kyle Kuzma right now. Why would you want Melo to take that away from Kuzma?
Yeah, no, I agree. Like I said.
Plus, I don't think Melo, even if Melo says he'll do that, he's not going to be happy doing it.
It's just not worth it. And it's one of those deals where, and then in that reduced role, is he that much more valuable than the guys you're blocking? Does he suck up minutes from guys who are far more important? Yes, he does. And also, too, I think, you know, when you listen to what they said, when you listen to Rondo, he was on our air last week, about how they're going to play, he says they're going to try to play fast. And that, I think, certainly at the very least, faster than LeBron typically does. They want to get LeBron out in front of breaks because... Not running him, running the break, but get him out in front of it.
Right, the recipient of the go-ahead.
Only Russell Westbrook had more points finishing breaks than LeBron did, because who the hell is going to get in the way of that? Not anyone. People just move. And that's easy points for LeBron. It's easy, easy stuff for him to do. Like it was a couple years ago when the Lakers had Kobe. And when Kobe was on the floor, they played slower. The minute he got off, they tried to run. I suspect the second unit will try to do the same when LeBron doesn't
It's
play.
Actually easy to picture this roster is, currently constructed, having a first unit that's going to be older and moves more methodically, moves more in half court, than a second unit that just runs.
Or, again.
Like the Lakers did with Kobe and Powell, the bench mob.
And so... That,
well, you said just when Kobe got off the floor. I just meant they had an entire second unit built for running.
That's the idea. And so regardless of how fast LeBron plays, there's still a good chance they'll try to speed it up even more when LeBron's off the floor. You can't do that with Carmelo Anthony.
No.
And so I just, it's just not a good idea.
No, it's a really bad idea. I mean, he can possibly start in Houston. I really hope that everybody, including Mike D'Antoni, can sell him on this.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't do it if I were them, but that's just me. That said, though, there's not a lot left. And the Lakers, there's no perfect fit anymore in terms of, I think Lopez would have, for me, been the ideal, you know, fills a role, stretch guy. Maybe they think Wagner has played well enough that he can soak up some of those minutes, or whatever it might be. But he's obviously off the board. And after that, it's, you know, if you probably figure they'll look for somebody who can shoot. It's Dante Cunningham type guys.
Wayne Ellington,
James Ennis. You know, maybe you could. They've been linked to Luke Richard and Bamute, who's restricted, I believe.
I'm not sure.
No, I don't remember. But Houston wants him back.
Better after losing Ariza.
And so I don't even know if Bamute can be restricted, whatever it is. But if they can get, you know, somebody like him, where he plays, when he plays, but kind of developed into a quietly competent three-point guy. They're not. None of these guys are going to be the types of dudes other than Ellington who really move people around on the floor. And they probably could use a wing more than they could use another guard, which makes Ellington a little trickier. But at this point, you just got to pick somebody up who you think might be able to help. You stash them on the bench, and you either play them or you don't.
Yeah. I mean,
you're not going to get great help at this point.
No. At this point, all the really good names that are not restricted free agents that the Lakers can't get anyway because they put that money that they have left over towards
right,
it.
Right. 1 year. We'll offer you 1 year, $5.5 million.
Pretty sure the other team's going to match.
Qualifying offer. And right. They'll certainly match. It's like, thank you.
Yeah. You're doing the other team a huge favor. Someone actually asked me that on Twitter, at Cam Brothers, if the Lakers could make that type of move for Clint Capella. And I'm like, Rockets certainly hope they will.
1 year. I don't think that is the offer sheet Capella is going to sign.
Right.
1 year, $5.3 million. No. So we'll see what they do. There's not a whole lot of help out there. And we, you know, it gets a – it makes me wonder, and we can touch on Summer League here a little bit, how much they think those guys in Svi and Wagner can play. And I don't, I make a point out of not watching that much Summer League because it doesn't mean a whole lot aside from if you're good, it doesn't mean that you'll be good in the NBA. If you suck, it might be a problem.
I mean, you and I have talked about this a lot of times in the past, is particularly over the last few years when the Lakers have actually had young guys that matter. What is important is that your second-year guy looks good in the Summer League, and Josh Hart doing very well in the Summer League. That's exactly what you want to see.
But it's interesting. I didn't even need to see that this year because I watched him play
effectively
in the
NBA. Sure, but I'm just saying,
like,
it's one of those things that just you're happy to see.
Yeah, it's better. It's better. It's better than the alternative.
Right.
So, you know, what's funny, though, is that, you know, we don't know yet if Wagner can play, if Mikaela can play, but they look like guys who fit the exact profile of everybody else that the Lakers have gone out and drafted. You know, Wagner has shown the ability to handle, his shooting has been okay, but he's handled the ball really well. He's finished nicely. His hands have been better than people.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously was not that familiar with Mo Wagner because, like you, I don't watch college basketball at all.
I've never heard of him.
Yeah, I'd never heard of him either.
I'll cop to that. I had no idea who that person was.
But he's much more comfortable putting the ball on the floor and, you know, like creating his own shots going to the basket.
He's a Euro big.
Right.
He's a skillful guy who, you know, is going to have trouble switching, maybe, might not be so
But he's more, again, this is against Summer League competition. He is more mobile than I expected the Euro big to be.
Yeah, he's good.
He's been
good
more
athlete.
Mobile than I expected.
And so, and Mikaela looks like he can, you know, he's, again, shooting reasonably well, but three or four assists, and he's got a couple steals here and there, and a couple rebounds. And one of these guys who just knows how to play.
Svi, by the way, could be on this team for the next 10 years, and I will never feel fully confident that I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
I'm okay with Mikaelic. It's something like that.
No. I know that's how you say it, but it's pronounced so much differently than it's spelled. I'm never going to be fully confident.
There does seem to be. Because when you just say,
I've seen on Twitter people who are Michigan fans arguing over how it's actually said.
But like, if you just say like Mikaela, which is I think close enough that he's not going to yell at you, that doesn't correspond to the number of letters.
That's what I'm saying. I'm never going to be fully confident, even if I know I'm right.
Right.
There's going to be a part
just
of me.
Just you feel like you're leaving letters out.
There's going to be a part of me, Brian, just doubting myself for a while.
I get it. But it speaks.
I'm not good
to,
with that stuff anyway.
It speaks. No, you're not. You're really
no, I'm not.
Pronunciations
That's part of
the problem. And names are no. not your forte. If knowing what day it is my my black hole, that's really yours.
Mm-hmm.
It speaks to how the expectations now for Lakers draft picks. Like, if either one of these guys turn out not to be great players, Mikhailik was what, like the 47th pick or something, like 49th?
Right.
Like, those guys never turn out to be good. And if he washes out of the league, everybody's going to be like, what the hell? And, you know, Wagner drafted at 25. That's not usually a place where you find an impactful dude. But Lakers fans are going to be like, what the hell if it doesn't turn out well? So that's that speaks to the competence of the front
office. But
they've
both looked
regard.
Good in the summer league, and that's nice to see.
Right. Again, doesn't mean they're going to be able to play this year. It doesn't mean they're going to be useful. There is a role for Mikhailik, especially as a wing who can shoot.
Wagner may have an opportunity to be in the center rotation. I mean, right now it's JaVale McGee and Zoo.
Neither of which do the stuff that
Wagner does. Forget neither one of them doing what Mo Wagner does. Neither of which inspire confidence, period.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, even if you figure you divide, with this rotation, you divide it up based on need and whatever. There's nobody who covers, we need a five who can stretch the floor out a little bit. So,
sure.
Hopefully they can play, because Lopez would have solved that problem.
That's sort of my point, though, is like, beyond Mo's skill set, there's just an overriding weakness at center. The three options, none of which make you feel great about playing more than like 15 minutes a night.
Really, maybe just how they do it. One more thing regarding the Lakers before we get to the JBL, which always sounds to me like one of the many Jewish organizations. And that's a function of my upbringing as much as anything.
Well, and also the JDL.
The JDL, the which rhymes. But it's the Jewish Defense League. But it
very
just feels
different than this basketball organization.
That different, you think? Okay. One of the questions that we're answering for a roundtable this week on The Athletic with Bill Oram and Jovan Buha and Pete is where the Lakers fit. Like, how would you seed the Western Conference right now? I cheated. We talked, I think, a little bit about this last week, but, you know, things have become a little more clear over the course of the week. I think it's pretty obvious that there are three teams that are better than the other teams in the West. Golden State is
It's the JBA, by the way.
Oh, well, it still makes me sound like a...
Oh, no, I'm not...
So it's league instead of it's association.
It's the JBA league.
JBA league.
Yes.
What? It's the... What's the J for?
It's the
Junior Basketball Association League.
Well, I mean, it's like everything with Big Baller. There's always this redundancy.
One more thing.
Like, you don't need to call it the Big Baller brand because Big Baller is the brand.
Yes. It's the JBA League?
It's the JBA League.
That's stupid.
Look, I've said this a lot when it comes to everything LeVar Ball. There's been a need for some workshopping.
Are launched often before they're fully baked.
Yeah, I mean they could use a few people with a little more experience.
JBA still sounds a little like a Jewish organization.
Oh, it does. There's no
it just
question.
Just doesn't rhyme with JDL.
Yes.
But anyway, Golden State's clearly the best team in the conference. That was with or without Boogie. Houston, I think, is still the second best team. There's still a gap there, I think, for me between Houston and Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And Utah's the third best team in there. I think those three teams enter the season as the ones you'd pick to be better than the other ones.
I agree to a point. I will explain that after you're done.
But after that, the Lakers, Oklahoma City, New Orleans, Denver, Minnesota, and Portland. Honestly, if you told me that those five teams would be separated by two games in the standings this year, I would believe that. I don't know. Forget how many wins, but like 4 through 9 could be separated by two games.
It's going to be a carbon copy of what happened this year.
Absolutely. And then that ignores San Antonio for a moment. And if you wanted to throw them in, because again, they won 47 games last year without Kawhi Leonard. So even if they trade him this year, let's say they trade him for Brandon Ingram and whatever, they're going to get more out of that role on the team this year than they did last year. They'll be better. and they won 47, so they could win 47, 48, 49 again this year. So now you're talking 4 through 10, separated by potentially 2 or 3 games, and the Clippers, I think, are the next best team, but clearly lagging behind. But they'll be okay. You know, they won't be terrible.
No.
43, 44.
The West is just brutal,
it's
man.
It's insane.
I mean, Phoenix should get better. I mean, like, there's...
This conference is insane.
Yes. Yes, it
is. Dallas will be better.
Yes. I'm not going to give my entire rankings because I want to make sure that our loyal subscribers, that they get a surprise.
Right,
because
you could come over and read it to them.
Right, exactly. I'm going to...
Number one.
Exactly.
Golden State.
But there are 2 points that I will... give specificities to. First of all, I disagree with you that Houston is still the second best team in the
conference. And I understand why.
I actually think that they're going to fall a few pegs between missing Trevor Ariza, which I think matters for them a lot.
It does.
Because he was able to play in any type of style or unit or
configuration. No, he was an important player. There's no question.
I think they're going to miss him a lot, and they don't really have a great way to replace him. And I, you know, Chris Paul,
PJ Tucker.
Chris Paul is only getting older.
Yep.
And, you know, I think the idea, they know probably that they had their best shot at taking out Golden State last year, and that's, it could motivate them, but I think it'd also be deflating. I also have the Lakers pegged as the sixth seed for next year. And you'll see how I have everybody else, 1 through 8. But the 6 seed and the 3 seed, I think, will be nominally different at best when it comes to the actual
Sure. I mean,
records.
It's one of those deals where, like, they're all going to be really close.
Yep.
But the point is, like –
But my number 3 prediction, if it comes true, and the Lakers are 6, it's a really, really fun first-round series. I think I may have pegged it this way just because I want to see it.
You want to see it.
It'd be really
Lakers fans,
fun.
Use your imagination and figure out who would be the best team for the Lakers to see in the first round of the playoffs.
This
next
would
year.
Be fun.
Point being, the Lakers could be, they will be, they have LeBron James. They will be significantly better this year, but it's not a guarantee that they're just going to be like a top 4 team or something like that just because they got LeBron.
Nope.
So we'll see how that goes. But it's going to be fun, despite the fact that Golden State is head and shoulders still better than everyone. I do think they are vulnerable. I do think they can be beaten. And every year, weird things happen, and they're one Steph Curry ankle turn away from in the playoffs from being very, very vulnerable, as we learned this year. All right. Hold on.
Hey, brothers. Welcome to my nation.
Andy, we have ball news.
Yes. The JBA League. The JBA League, the Junior Basketball Association League, allow myself to introduce myself, put out a rather detailed press release announcing that LiAngelo Ball has joined the Los Angeles Ballers from Los Angeles. If you thought the first round of JBA leagues were exciting, then you have seen nothing yet with round two.
I did not.
Well,
narrator.
Hang on.
They did not.
Hang on to your hats. The JBA has exceeded expectations with teams virtually even in the standings. The Los Angeles
Ballers. What does that mean? They've exceeded expectations with teams virtually even in the standings? Huh?
The Los Angeles Ballers. There are a lot of questions from this press release. The Los Angeles Ballers, who were one of the favorites to win the JBA.
I know that's where my money was.
Thank God for legalized sports gambling. Fell into a funk and have added an interesting piece to their squad.
Oh?
After NBA teams surprisingly passed on LiAngelo Ball, he went to work out and give teams.
I like when press releases editorialize.
He went to work out and give the teams that passed him a show. After seeing the competitiveness of the JBA and the talent level, LiAngelo made the decision to join the Los Angeles Ballers along with his younger brother, LaMelo, and was present for the first practice this past Saturday. I wonder how he heard about it.
Do you remember when Tori Spelling got cast on 90210?
Yes.
And like she supposedly went in there and like didn't use her name.
Yeah, she auditioned under a different name.
Right, and like nobody knew it was Aaron Spelling's daughter and all these other things.
She looks just like the girl that got bat mitzvah.
Right,
Aaron's
we were
daughter.
All there, like there, huh. You know, and we were supposed to buy that Tori Spelling.
Every year
I
spend Christmases at the Spelling Estate, and
looks like
her.
But,
just
you know,
like
we all
her,
have doppelgangers. This is actually like harder to believe.
It gets
like
better.
the fact that they're playing this straight, like he just chose this league after looking around.
Yes.
You know, the G League wasn't his thing, summer league not his thing. You know what? I'm gonna take a look at this upstart JBA league again, redundancy, and see what's there for me.
Right. LiAngelo actually addresses this. Quote, I just want to win for the team, LiAngelo said. That's all I want to do. I'm trying to play ball, and I'm trying to get better every day. Not sure what that has to do with anything. Los Angeles got off to a great start as expected, but dropped back games to New York and Dallas. A tune-up was needed, and it came with the addition of LiAngelo. It's all business, LaMelo Ball said. Quote, if you're not playing hard, you get sent home. They brought in Jello while he's been working out at home. This is the JBA. You have to come to play. I love playing with my brother.
Go hard or go home. That's right.
We have great chemistry. It feels good to play with him again.
I like how Melo is kind of putting Jello on notice here. It's like, look, you think you can just waltz into the JBA and
play?
You know
where they got that idea? They got that idea with the Lakers signing Rondo as putting Lonzo on notice.
That's right.
Shot across the bow.
I'm looking up the standings.
The press release continues. One team that is not surprised anybody has
How many
been...
games do you think these teams have played, by the way?
I want to say three.
Three or four.
Yeah.
Like, they're all talking about this,
yes.
Like, there's these rocketing up and down
yes.
the standings, like the league's been going on for 6 months.
That's a very fluid league.
Yes.
One team that has not surprised anybody, this press release continues, has been the Atlanta Ballers. Atlanta was expected to roll through everyone, and they have done just that. The only surprise was that...
Wait, I might have been looking up the wrong team.
The only... Are you looking up the JBL?
Different
the
JV.
Only surprise is that big man Corey... Big Jelly Boyd has not been the key guy on that team. That is surprising. Shooting duo.
How is Big Jelly playing? Has he been disappointing?
I mean, I wouldn't say he's been disappointing. He's just been overshadowed by, the press release continues, shooting duo Jordan Ray and Nigel Chaney have been lights out for the Atlanta Ballers, while Big Jelly, Fion Brown, and company do the rest of the work. Atlanta's deep roster will look to stay undefeated in round two. The team below Atlanta was in the bottom of the standings to begin the season, but has soared to the second round. New York lacks height, but they make up for it with hard work and hustle. Calvin Brown has been the key to the team, but he has had teammates step up when needed, like Morisana Camara, who led New York to their third straight victory on Thursday night against Chicago. It seemed like New York's winning spot got a boost with the addition of Nolan Irby. The shape and scrappy mindset coach Marvin McCollum embodies, who are both natives of Harlem. As Harrison Fagan pointed out, the editor-in-chief of Silver Screen and Roll, this was a longer press release than when Clutch announced that LeBron was joining the Lakers.
This is more important.
Well, this is official, though.
Right.
I mean, remember, LeBron's
not here yet.
Yeah, LeBron can still turn his back on the Lakers.
Here's how you know that they are, in fact, paying these kids what they're saying they're paying them. They're clearly not springing for a guy to write press releases.
Wow.
Nearly that guy writing the press releases.
That's a lot going on in that press release.
A lot going on there. So congratulations to LaMelo Ball.
After surprisingly
not being we were surprised.
That is an amazing press release.
It's a great release. We have it out on Cam Brothers if you didn't get a chance. But I am shocked. Shocked that it turned out that way. By the way, am I the only one who thinks that these Los Angeles Ballers games are going to be ref like Putin hockey games?
It's going to be like, you know how in the Philippines when Manny Pacquiao plays
right,
basketball?
Exactly. Same thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be like that.
I mean, the first sign is going
to
be...
The only difference is nobody has to call LaMelo and Jello dear leader.
The first sign is that LaVar is actually one of the referees.
Foul. All right, well, so we'll see how that turns out. I don't think they've been well attended, those games, but people are watching on Facebook.
Well, in what could be described as an unorthodox approach, I believe the first game was the night of the NBA draft.
That's right. Yes, they are all the Ballers. The Atlanta Ballers, the Chicago Ballers, the Dallas. This is brilliant, actually. It really is brilliant. The Houston Ballers, the Los Angeles Ballers, the New York Ballers, the Philadelphia Ballers, and the Seattle Ballers.
It's branding on point.
Do you know who the coach of the Los Angeles Ballers is?
No.
Doyle Balthazar.
That's a great name.
A great name.
It's a really good name.
It is a great name. Still can't find standings.
That's okay.
Yeah. Anywho.
We know that the L.A. Ballers got off to a slow start, but that's now fixed because they got Lee Angelo.
No, they got off to a hot start, Andy, and then they...
It's very unclear. It's very unclear because, I mean, how hot of a start can you be on when you've played like three games?
I don't know.
And we know that they lost back-to-back ones, so the whole thing is very confusing. I mean, unless this season has gone on much longer than any of us are aware of and they've played like 20 games.
They started on draft night.
I'm just
How many
saying,
games could they have played?
It's very, very unclear what's going on in this league.
I'm confused. But anyway, Godspeed. Godspeed to those little fellas down there in the JBA league. And we'll keep an eye on it and see how it goes because this is the league that LaMelo chose.
Mm-hmm.
And it very well may be the league that Lee Angelo chose and that Lee Mello may never get out
La
of.
Mello.
May never escape.
Yeah.
All right. We'll have more summer league stuff and maybe more free agency. And then we're going to be out of town. So we'll see. We'll be back next week though.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Anything else?
Nope.
See you later.